This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
Welcome back to another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and thank you for joining me as always. Week 6 of the college football season is finished. Week 5 of the NFL season is wrapping up as I am recording this, with Tuesday night football as the Tennessee Titans are facing the Buffalo Bills. And I'm here to break down everything that happened in this past weekend of games with the NFL draft report, where we dissect many of the draft eligible prospects, take a look at some underclassmen, take a look ahead to the following week of games, and then obviously share my thoughts on the NFL rookie report for week 5. Before I get started, I do want to apologize for last week during the podcast in the tail of the tape, where we kind of take a look ahead and preview some of the prospects and matchups for this upcoming weekend. I guess I got excited and I was previewing week 7's games and not week 6's games last week. So last week, the tail of the tape, if you were confused when listening to the podcast, those were previewing week 7's matchups. So I did not ever preview week 6's matchup. So I guess I was just on the wrong week and had previewed the week 7 matchups, which obviously I'll get to a little bit later today in this podcast when we do actually take a look at week 7 with that upon us now as well. But let's start with the NFL draft report. A lot of draft eligible prospects that I thought were intriguing from this past weekend, and then follow it up with the Devy Slant, talk about some underclassmen guys as well. So let's start with the quarterback position. The first guy I want to talk about is Kyle Trask out of Florida, and he's a guy who I've talked about a bunch here at Saturday to Sunday, and he seems a guy that is, I was a little bit lower than I think some people before the season started. But in the early going here, he's making some noise to potentially move his way up the rankings. Because as I've said on here, the top 3, I think, is locked in. But then I think it's wide open with Jamie Newman, who's opting out this year, Brock Purdy, who's been inconsistent in the early going, Desmond Ridder, also been inconsistent, KJ Costello, who I'll talk about momentarily, who had that first great game and now has really looked horrific the last couple games. Sam Ellinger has had his ups and downs. So I think Kyle Trask is in the mix, you know, and he could be one of those guys that if he continues to play as he's playing this past week, I know Florida lost, but, you know, Kyle Trask, 312 yards, 4 touchdowns, continue to look good. And this is a guy who, you know, did not have a lot of experience prior to this year. So as this year goes on, he could be a guy you're starting to hear more day 2 buzz. And then maybe if he continues it, maybe even late round 1 buzz. He was a guy who I thought was more early day 3. And now I think he's already shown enough to put himself in the mix and potentially to be a day 2 guy. And we'll see if he can continue that upward trajectory for the rest of the season and then in the pre-draft process as well. So Kyle Trask is a guy who I think has really helped himself out in the early going. Next up, Miles Brennan out of LSU, 430 yards and 4 touchdowns. They lost again to LSU this past weekend, but Brennan put up very good statistical numbers. His star wide receiver, you know, we'll talk about when we get to the wide receivers, but Brennan is showing that he is a very solid replacement for Joe Burrow. The LSU offense is putting up production right now. Their defense kind of letting them down a little bit. But Brennan, 430 yards, 4 touchdowns, impressive this week. I mentioned Sam Ellinger before, you know, this past week, 287 yards, 2 touchdowns, but he did have 2 picks. But again, he adds that running component as well, 112 rushing yards. Still seeing the inconsistencies with Ellinger, in which I saw on film over the last couple years. I love his leadership skills. I love his ability to make things happen with his athleticism, his legs, his play strength, you know, bounce off defenders, stay alive in the pocket, take off and play off structure. But the pure quarterbacking skills, you know, the mental processing, the ability to read defenses, read coverages, overall accuracy. There's still inconsistencies, and that's going to be the thing that hampers Ellinger when we're talking about him translating as a pro prospect. So I'd like to see him clean that up a little bit. I talked about how Trask in Florida lost to Texas A&M. On the other side of that game was Kellen Mond, 338 yards and three touchdowns. At times, Kellen Mond is really impressive. His, you know, I've talked about this, his ability to play off structure, his ability to throw on the run. But you see inconsistencies similar to what I was just talking about with Sam Ellinger. They continue to pop up on film with Kellen Mond, as good as his statistical output looks. So he's a guy who, again, is another guy who I think is day three. We'll see if he can, you know, push his way, you know, up the draft board at all before draft season rolls around. I mentioned Brock Purdy before. He's had some really poor games this year. This past week, I thought it was one of his better games. 31 of 43, 302 yards, two touchdowns. Also showed his athleticism, seven carries for 42 yards. A guy who can make things happen with his athleticism. And not only in terms of rushing, but more in terms of just moving around in the pocket, which has become so prevalent now in the NFL that I think teams are looking for that. You know, if you can move around the pocket, offensive line play is probably at an all-time low in the NFL right now. You need a quarterback who could, A, handle the pressure, make things happen with his legs, and not just take off running, but to be able to scramble, to throw on the run, to make plays off structure. And I think Purdy has that. It'll be interesting to kind of see, you know, if he could kind of hold on to that number four, number five quarterback in this class with guys like Kyle Trask really showing off well so far in the early going of the year and Purdy being a little inconsistent, but I do like his raw skills a lot. A couple other guys I want to talk about. I mentioned KJ Costello before. I mean, 232 yards, four interceptions this past week. As good as Mississippi State looked when they knocked off LSU, they have came crashing back to reality. Costello is a guy who I was excited about getting him out of Stanford into a new offense, that Mike Leach offense with so many guys have been very productive. And right now, you know, this was part of the concern about KJ Costello, even when before last college football season. I liked him. I liked his raw tools. But there was a lot of growth and development and consistency that was needed that just hasn't been there. And I was kind of hoping in this new scheme, we were going to see a more consistent quarterback. Well, right now, those raw tools are still there, but the consistency is still lacking. And you see that in a game like this, you know, four interceptions, really struggled his accuracy, his processing, reading defenses. Those are the things that are going to hinder him from moving up draft boards if NFL teams are concerned about that. Kind of buried the lid a little bit. Trevor Lawrence, I mean, I could talk about him every week. I don't know what else more is there to say about him. He's on the fast, you know, track to being the first pick in the draft. As good as Justin Fields is, as good as Trey Lance is, I don't think Trevor Lawrence is not going to go first unless there's some type of injury between now and then. And honestly, unless it was a catastrophic injury, I don't think it would even impact it. I think he's going to be the first pick this past week, 292 yards and three touchdowns. I mean, it's every week, but it's not just that. It's he looks even better this year than he has in the previous few years. Last year, at the beginning of the year, he had some decision-making issues. He seemed to be rattled by pressure a little bit. That doesn't seem to be the case at all this year. Trevor Lawrence has looked absolutely fantastic. Mac Jones, who obviously is replacing Tua at Alabama, 417 yards and two touchdowns this week. He's going to be an interesting one because I think he right now is kind of, you know, I mentioned Kellen Mond before as a day three guy. I think you can throw Mac Jones into that mix, Ian Book, Shane Bichelle. Some of these guys are going to get drafted potentially on day three. You know, I think Jones is going to be in the spotlight all year there at Alabama. So it's going to be interesting to see if he could kind of make himself, you know, a draftable prospect in that round four to round six mix, you know, or a late round slash UDF guy. You know, which path does it go? I think it's still to be determined with him. I think people still need to see more film on him, need to see him face some adversity, you know, in some big spots. I think this upcoming week against Georgia will be a very interesting test for Mac Jones. So I'll be watching closely. In addition to on the other side of the Alabama game, Matt Corral, 365 yards, two touchdowns, really put up a good fight, 13 rushes for 40 yards as well. He seems to be coming into his own a little bit this year. He's a guy that, you know, obviously Matt Caracho here Saturday, Sunday was a big fan of. It kind of looked like it was never going to click, but it looks like it's starting to click for him this year. So impressive performance to keep, you know, Ole Miss in that game against Alabama for deep into the fourth quarter. So that was a lot mostly Corral's doing. So impressive performance by him. If you take this to the running back group, you know, I mentioned Alabama, I mentioned Georgia. You know, Zamir White this past week, 22 carries, 56 yards, and one touchdown. So a heavy workload, showing that he can carry that heavy workload, but not very efficient or very productive. And as I've mentioned before, he doesn't bring a lot to the passing game. So that's going to hurt him in terms of his draft stock a little bit. Najee Harris, absolute monster this past week, 206 yards and five touchdowns. If you're following along with me on Twitter, I put out a couple tweets about him on Saturday. I think you can make the case, and I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's wrong that he's the most complete of the running backs in terms of the 2021 draft class. If somebody wants to have Travis Etienne ahead of him, I get it. The rare stop start acceleration. I mean, this past week himself, Etienne, 149 yards, two touchdowns, eight catches, 73 yards. He has shown more growth and development in terms of his passing game, and his stop start acceleration is rare, his burst. But if you're talking about the complete package, vision, patience, power, athleticism, receiving ability, I think Najee Harris is a better receiver than Etienne. I think he's a better interior runner. You know, I have Etienne slightly ahead of him in my rankings because I do think Etienne has some of those rare qualities, that stop, start, acceleration, the long speed, the burst. So I have him slightly ahead, but I think the case can be made that as a complete running back, Najee Harris is even better than Travis Etienne. I think both of them should be in the mix as late first round to top 10 picks in the second round. I'd expect both of them to be immediate impact players at the next level once they get there. Excited to see Harris this upcoming weekend as well. Kylan Hill, we talked about KJ Costello. 15 catches this week for 79 yards. Obviously, it wasn't very productive on those 15 catches, but what he is doing in that offense is showing a little bit more of a versatility to be a guy that can be a factor in the passing game. And I think that's important because I think his rushing style this past week, he didn't do much on the ground, seven rushes for 17 yards. And I've made the comparison to, I think he's a very similar player to Zach Moss, but I do think he is showing this year that his receiving capabilities, and I know Zach Moss is a serviceable pass catching running back. But I think Kylan Hill's got a little bit more upside in terms of his passing capabilities, catching passes out of the backfield. And I think this offense, which is going to constantly pepper the running back with targets, is going to help Kylan Hill have a very productive season catching passes. That's going to look more impressive than it probably even is. But I think he is going to eventually settle in as a above average to good pass catcher at a backfield, which is going to make his total package a little bit more impressive. So I do think that's the one thing that I was excited about Kylan Hill in that Mike Leach offense, and I think it's coming to fruition. A couple other running backs, Keontae Ingram, you know, I was really excited for him. I had him really high in my pre-draft rankings based on last year's film. They just don't seem to be, you know, right now Ellinger's getting a lot of the rushing attempts. He's had some ball security issues. But I still think, you know, this past week he caught a pass catching touchdown, four catches, 21 yards and a touchdown. Didn't do much on the ground. I still think he's got three down capabilities. So I'm going to be interested to kind of see how the rest of the season plays out for him. He could be a guy that has more intrigue in terms of what the NFL thinks of him than maybe even his production at Texas in terms of his collegiate usage and production, because the rushing there is so skewed towards Ellinger right now that I think Ingram's getting a little bit lost in the shuffle, but he's got to clean up those ball security issues because NFL coaches won't put him on the field. And that could be hindering why maybe he's not seeing as much usage as I thought. A couple other players I want to talk about. If we take this over to the wide receivers, I mentioned Miles Brennan before. Terrace Marshall, his number one wide receiver, 11 catches, 235 yards, and three touchdowns. Marshall is number six on my wide receiver rankings right now. I think he's pushing his way into the round one mix. And I think you're talking about Ja'Marr Chase, who opted out this year, Rashad Bateman, who opted out, Rondale Moore, who now is opted back in, Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, Terrace Marshall. I think those now are the top six wide receivers in this class. I think there's some other guys that are nipping on their heels, but I think those are the six right now. And Marshall brings a different type of player than all of the guys that I just mentioned. You know, I think he's more physical. I think he is a guy that could dominate at the catch point. So Devonta Smith has his own skill set, Jalen Waddle, all those guys. But I think Marshall is different than them. So you could see a team maybe even think more highly of Marshall than some of those Alabama guys or Rondale Moore. So I think Marshall is now elevating himself into the first round mix. And very much, if he's not in the first round, we're talking early, early second round. I think he's going to continue to elevate his stock. I loved his game last year when he was the third guy in the pecking order, you know, with Justin Jefferson there, obviously Ja'Marr Chase. But now that he's at the top, I think he's going to become much more nationally well-known. And I think you're going to see his stock really, really skyrocket. The UNC side, Daz Newsome and Dyami Brown. I talked about Daz Newsome last week and said I don't know why he wasn't seeing much usage, but this week that changed. 7 catches, 69 yards, and a touchdown. Dyami Brown, 3 catches, 86 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I think these guys are two prototypical guys that I keep coming back to that in a different draft class, I think these guys would be in that top 12, top 13 range. And, you know, for me, I have these guys, you know, in the second half between 16 and 20. Just to show you the depth of this class and how talented of a class it is. So both these guys intrigue me. Kadarius Toney continues to get it done. I got him into the Saturday, Sunday rankings notebook. He comes in at number 17. I had a chance to watch some film. I have not added his scouting notes yet to the scouting notebook. That he will be one of two guys that I add sooner rather than later. Toney and Reggie Roberson out of SMU. Two guys who really, obviously Roberson, still, unless I missed it, still waiting word on the severity of his injury. It doesn't sound promising, so he might, you know, miss the season or miss significant time. And then Toney really having a breakout season, kind of going hand in hand with Kyle Trask's breakout so far this year. But those are two guys that, you know, I have them at 17 and 18 now in terms of this draft class, in terms of wide receiver prospects. They can move up a little bit still. Maybe they can get over those slot guys like the Tutu Atwells, Elijah Moore, Daz Newsomes of the world. But it's going to be hard for them to crack the top 13, because I look at the top 13 guys and, you know, I see really skilled players who have been doing it longer, have a greater pedigree that I think, you know, maybe they can push their way to round the top 15. But some of these slot guys are so explosive and game-breaking type players that I think are going to be better, that could serve as better complements to an NFL offense, that the type of player they're looking for. So I'm not ready to bump those guys just yet from my 14, 15, 16 spot. So I ended up going with Roberson and Toney at the 17, 18 spot. But I mean, this past week, Toney, another 92 yards, 2 touchdowns, 7 catches, continues to look really impressive. One of the slot receivers I just talked about, I don't know what more is to say. Elijah Moore every single week producing 11 catches, 143 yards. This was against Alabama. Explosive player out of the slot. Moore continues for me to see his stock rise. But again, as good as he is, I'm not sure he can work his way into that top 13 just based on how talented the list of wide receivers is this year. The Alabama guys who I mentioned before when I was talking about Terrace Marshall, Devonta Smith, his breakout game of the year, 13 catches, 164 yards and 1 touchdown. Jalen Waddle, 6 catches, 120 yards. I watch Waddle. I see Tyreek Hill, you know, so I think he's going to maybe push the envelope a little bit in terms of NFL teams. I think might value Waddle a little bit more than Devonta Smith. That doesn't take anything away from Devonta Smith and how much I like him. But I do think Waddle's calling card of that rare, you know, big playability, the ability to get vertical. He plays a lot like Tyreek Hill, in my opinion. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see how those Alabama wide receivers. I think both of them are going to be first round picks. So similar to Jeudy and Ruggs, I don't think it really matters the order in which they go. They're both going to be early picks. And then Tamarian Terry is another guy. I mentioned the top six before with Terrace Marshall. Tamarian Terry is another guy that I think belongs right there. I have Justin Ross, you know, now at seven. Obviously, he's not playing this year due to a neck injury. But Tamarian Terry is another guy who I think he's a day two lock, but I think he's got some first, I think he's got first round talent. So he's another guy that could get in the mix. I think he's just being talked about less because of how down Florida State is. But you put him on LSU, you put him on Alabama, I think you're talking about a guy who's flat out dominating and being recognized significantly more than he is at Florida State. I mean, he's dominating at Florida State with poor quarterback play, poor offense. You know, they've been really down, and he continues to be fantastic. So he's a guy I think you're going to hear more and more, and his crescendo is going to continue to build right during draft season as well. I think right into a top 50 type mix there for him. At the tight end position, I could talk about Kyle Pitts every week, just keeps it going, a touchdown this past week. And then I want to talk about Charlie Kolar out of, you know, he's an interesting player out of Iowa State. He's a guy that I think could be a guy that's on the day two mix, because I think that's kind of, you know, his type of player. He's got good size. I like his ball skills. He wins contested catches. So to me, he's a guy that, you know, I think could see his stock rise. Obviously, I think right now the consensus is Pitts, Pat Freiermuth, Brevin Jordan. But then I think it's wide open. And I think Kolar's got a chance to be that fourth tight end off the board. I think he's got a chance to be a day two pick. So it was nice to see him find the end zone this past week as well. If we take this to the Devy slant, where we talk about some of the top underclassmen prospects, Sam Howell, I just keep mentioning him because I keep mentioning his wide receivers, Daz Newsom, Dami Brown. But every time I watch Howell play, I mean, the stats aren't super gaudy, 257 yards and three touchdowns. But when you watch him play, you see a high-level prospect. I'm really intrigued with this guy. I keep saying it. I think he's going to be the hands-down QB1 prospect for the 2022 draft. So keep a close eye on him. Try to get him now in any Devy leagues if you can get your hands on him. At the running back position, Tank Bigsby out of Auburn, 6 feet, 204 pounds. He had 20 carries, 146 yards. Really impressive for the underclassmen running back. Bigsby is a guy that I know Matt Caraccio was a big fan of when he wrote him up in the freshman notebook, was intrigued by his overall skill set. He's a guy that I think, you know, producing already, you know, shows, I think, what type of high-level prospect he is going to be. You know, size and frame, combine that with his athleticism. Bigsby really looked impressive this week. Isaiah Spiller, who I think is going to be one of the top five or so running backs in the 2022 draft class, continues to look good for Texas A&M, 27 carries, 174 yards, and a touchdown. Jarian Ealy, who I continue to talk about in the Devy slant because he needs to be recognized of just how skillful he is. I think he's probably one of the top 5 to 6 most skilled running backs in the country in terms of his all-around game right now. 19 carries, 120 yards, and 2 touchdowns this past week. Ealy is a guy who I think the sky is the ceiling on this one in terms of just how talented of a player he could be. I fully expect him to be near the top of the running back board. Him, Breece Hall, you know, Isaiah Spiller, I think, you know, fast forward a year, I think those are the guys we're talking about to be the top running backs of the 2022 draft class. But Ealy is the one with Hall who are the ones that intrigue me the most. Another guy I want to make note of, Kevin Harris out of South Carolina, is off to a red hot start. The 5'11", 229-pound running back this past week, 171 yards. But if you look at his game log this whole year, each week he's been producing big statistical production. So he's a guy that I want to get some more eyes on in terms of his film, because he's a guy who, you know, I'm not too familiar with, but he just keeps popping every time, you know, I see some highlights or stuff on Twitter or check the box scores. So Harris is a guy that, you know, I want to do a little bit of a deeper dive into to get a full understanding of his game. And then tight end, I've mentioned this guy on a couple Devy slants, Arik Gilbert, the freshman tight end. Six catches, 97 yards, and one score. I don't think people quite understand just how rare it is for a freshman tight end to be doing what Gilbert is doing. You know, so we're talking about a special type of tight end prospect who is dominating already this early in his collegiate career. So Gilbert is a guy who is, we're going to be talking about for years, and eventually he'll be in the way we're talking about Kyle Pitts this year, about and his draft capital, which I think now Pitts is now squarely in the mix, top 10, top 15. I think one day the day will come that we're talking about Arik Gilbert in the same way. If we take this to the tail of the tape, and this week I will do it correctly and take a look at week 7 games. So I did talk about some of these last week, but I'm going to go through it all again, and I've added some more. First game I want to talk about is LSU Florida. I've talked a lot about these guys already today. I'm so excited for this game because on the Florida side, you continue to see Trask and Kadarius Toney, two guys who are having breakout seasons. You know, how does Florida bounce back after their loss last week? How does Trask look in another high-profile game against an LSU team? Does Toney keep his success going this year against LSU? On the flip side, I mentioned Miles Brennan before and him putting up pretty good statistics early in the season, replacing Joe Burrow. I just talked about Arik Gilbert, you know, the dangerous playmaking freshman tight end, and then Terrace Marshall and the season he's putting together right now. So LSU, Florida, tons of fireworks in that game. Looking forward to that. Next up, another SEC matchup, Auburn versus South Carolina. The two running backs that I just talked about in the Devy slant. How does Tank Bigsby look in this game? And then how does Kevin Harris? I mean, I mentioned Kevin Harris before, but you're talking about a guy who's found the touchdown, found the end zone in each game the past 2 weeks, 171 and 2. The week before, 101. You know, can he keep this going against Auburn and their defense? Can Bigsby keep it going, you know, against South Carolina? I'd expect Bigsby to have a big game. Also have eyes on the quarterback wide receiver duo for Auburn, obviously Bo Nix, and then Seth Williams, who every time I watch him reminds me of a cross between Mike Evans and Alshon Jeffrey in that world. So I'll be watching those guys closely in that game. Another game, Notre Dame, Louisville. You know, Notre Dame moving up the polls now. On the ND side, Ian Book continues to be a very productive collegiate player. Not sure it's going to translate much to the NFL, but I'll see how he does this week. But I'm more intrigued with watching the other guys because on the Louisville side, you got the running back, Javion Hawkins, who I think is a big play waiting to happen, explosive change of pace type guy. You got Tutu Atwell, who I mentioned before, playmaking, vertical threat from inside in the slot, getting the ball in space. And then Des Fitzpatrick, a guy that Matt and I have been talking about for years here. We really like his overall game. We think he's an intriguing day three wide receiver who has inside-outside versatility. Another game, Texas A&M versus Mississippi State. I mentioned KJ Costello before and Kylan Hill. How do they look in this game? You know, Costello had that great first game. It's been shaky since. Does he get the start? I know the last game they took him out. You know, so I'll be watching that. If he gets the start, how does he look and bounce back? I'll continue to say I'm intrigued by his raw tools, but, you know, he's got to be much better than he was this past weekend. Can Kylan Hill get anything going on the run? Running this week is something I'll be watching. On the other side, Kellen Mond and Isaiah Spiller will be the two guys that I'll be watching closest from Texas A&M. Talked about both of them before, so I'm not going to get into them again. Next up, UNC versus Florida State. I just talked before about Tamarian Terry. How does he do in this game? Florida State's going to have to score some points to keep up with the UNC offense right now. And if they're scoring, it's probably going to be due to Tamarian Terry. So can he follow up his big game this past weekend with another one next weekend? On the UNC side, that quarterback double wide receiver connection, you know, they should have their way, I think, with Florida State's defense. So I'm expecting Sam Howell to have a really impressive performance again this week and see if Des Newsome could keep it going. And Diami Brown has been productive all year. He looks like he's his guy that Howell likes to push the ball vertically down the field and then see if they can continue to find ways to get Newsome the ball and him use his, you know, athleticism, his quickness, his agility, make people miss in the open field as well. And then the big one, Georgia versus Alabama on the Georgia side. Can Zamir White get anything going against that Alabama defense? I think he's going to have some difficulty, so I'm not expecting a big game from Zamir White. George Pickens, the very talented underclassman wide receiver for Georgia, is kind of off to a little bit of a slow start. So can he, you know, rise to the occasion this week and make some big plays against that Alabama defense? And then on the other side, I mentioned Mac Jones before. I think this is a big test for him. Excited to see him in this game. You know, Najee Harris coming off his 5-touchdown, 200-yard performance. How does he follow it up against the Georgia defense? And then the Alabama wide receivers. Can they slow down? I'm not going to say stop, but can they slow down Devonta Smith and Jaylen Waddle from wrecking havoc on the game, which they are so easily capable of doing because they're talented and can win at all three levels of the field, can get vertical, you know, can take a short pass and take it to the distance or just eat up receptions and yards, you know, in the intermediate parts of the field as well. So can Georgia slow down a little bit those Alabama wide receivers? So that's what I'll be looking for in week 7 of the college football season. I can't believe we're already there. Obviously, you know, it's a little bit of a unique year. You know, so we're in week 7, but then you still, you know, we're still waiting on the Big Ten to get going. You know, the Pac-12, you know, they're going to get going. Hopefully we can continue with this season. Obviously, you know, it'll be interesting to kind of see if we can just keep pushing forward on this and what happens if there's stoppages and stuff like that. So let's round out the night with the NFL rookie report for week 5. You know, I feel like every week when I, you know, write up the NFL rookie report for myself for the podcast, I'm more and more intrigued with many of these rookies. And, you know, we're not even getting anything from the tight end class, which is not that surprising. We knew, you know, Cole Kmet, Adam Trautman, Devin Asiasi, Harrison Bryant. We knew these guys were going to be bit players for the good portion of this season. Tight ends usually are, and that's even when it's a strong tight end class. You know, look at last year with Irv Smith and TJ Hockenson and Noah Fant. We didn't see much, you know, from them in terms of really producing from a week in and week out standpoint. You know, Hockenson had one good game his whole rookie year. Fant had a couple moments here or there, but, you know, and those were high level prospects. So not much to talk about the tight end. From the quarterback thing, I mean, I think the story is Justin Herbert. I mean, obviously this past week, Joe Burrow struggled a little bit against Baltimore. You know, I think that's kind of expected. You know, poor O-line. Burrow, I think, is still shown enough that all Bengals fans should be super excited. You see him, and I think as they continue to develop that line around him, I think you're going to see, you know, how special of a prospect Burrow is. But right now, Justin Herbert is flat out looked fantastic. And I liked Herbert. He was my third quarterback in this draft class, but I had some reservations about him. I thought at times he was a little inconsistent in college. You know, you didn't know if he could rise up to the big occasion. You know, you didn't know how he would handle NFL defenses. But I mean, this guy has looked, you know, last night, Chargers were the better team in that game last night and lost to the Saints. But I mean, he's battled Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees. And in each of those games, he's really produced, keeping his team in the game, giving them a chance to win. You know, this past last night, 264 yards and 4 touchdowns. He's making plays, you know, he's using his athleticism that we knew he had, but he's showing the ability to play off structure and make things happen with those legs and throw on the run. He's putting the ball in the tight windows, things that we didn't have to see a lot in college, but we obviously know in the NFL you're going to have to do that, and he's showing it. I mean, we knew he had the arm talent. We knew he had the athleticism. You were kind of waiting for him to put it all together. I didn't think it was going to come together this quickly in the NFL, but I mean, if this is any indication of what type of quarterback he's going to be at the NFL, the Chargers hit a home run getting him where they were able to get him, because he's been absolutely fantastic. If we take this to the running back, let's stay on the same team there for a second. Joshua Kelly, you know, obviously with Austin Eckler out, Kelly, we thought, might step into a bigger role, but, you know, he's had some fumbling issues. Ball security is key at the NFL level. You know, so it's going to be interesting to kind of see. Justin Jackson got a lot of run this week. You know, listen, I like Kelly, but to me, he's a guy he's a committee, probably a lesser part of a committee. So I think his role there with Austin Eckler is perfect. But with Austin Eckler out right now, I don't think people should expect more. I don't really think that, you know, people should, in a long-term dynasty window, to be honest with you, understand who Joshua Kelly is and what I think he's going to be. And if somebody values him more, or, you know, he has a big game next week, you know, and it's not Justin Jackson getting as much usage, then maybe sell Kelly at a high point this year, because I do think, you know, Austin Eckler's going to be there for a couple of years. They gave him a nice contract extension. I think Joshua Kelly is a replaceable talent, but he's probably best suited for the role that the Chargers are going to ask of him. So he has some value in fantasy. I just think at times people might be overexcited with what he could be. I think he could be a running back three flex type player as a committee back there for the Chargers. The UDFA sensation, James Robinson, this week struggled. 13 carries, 48 yards, 5 catches for 22 yards, still getting heavy usage. I've already made my feelings known that if you can get top dollar for him because someone's buying his start, if you can get a first-round rookie pick, I'm selling. I understand it's a nice story. I think he can maybe be their starter, but I'm not sold yet that he's the definitive starter moving forward. They might have, you know, a totally new regime in terms of the coaching staff. You know, they might have a new quarterback next year. You know, who knows? So if you could at some point turn James Robinson, who you probably picked up off waivers, into a first-round rookie pick, or maybe a potentially high early second-round rookie pick with the draft class that's coming out, I would advocate making that move as productive as he has been this year. And I think he will have a very productive year. But I still think that long-term, I'm not sold yet that, you know, for the next 3 or 4 years, you can count on him being, you know, a clear starting running back, you know, RB mid to high RB2 type, you know, running back in fantasy. So if you can sell as if he is locked into that, well, then great. I think you should sell and take advantage of that. Cam Akers came back from an injury, 9 carries, 61 yards. We'll see how that backfield kind of shakes itself out. I think right now it's kind of frustrating. And if, you know, if that's the plan, you know, by McVay, you know, in terms of what the Rams plan on doing, you know, if moving forward, it's going to be, let's say Malcolm Brown's not there next year and it's just an Akers-Henderson split, I think that does damper a little bit, you know, Cam Akers, you know, overall dynasty value. You know, I know Akers was going ahead of CeeDee Lamb in a lot of rookie drafts, and I think you're starting to see that maybe it was a mistake, you know, to have some of these running backs like Akers in the muddled backfield with the Rams, J.K. Dobbins with the muddled backfield with the Ravens. Maybe some of those guys shouldn't have been ahead of CeeDee Lamb, who's looking like a very, very special prospect. I'll get more to him in a second. Keeping on the running back position, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has really not had the impact that after that first week where he looked fantastic rushing, they don't seem to trust him right now in pass protection. So he's coming off the field a lot in terms of third down or hurry up. So that's impacting his overall usage. But even on the ground, like, he hasn't been able to get going since week one. You know, this week, most people thought it was a smash spot. He only had 10 carries for 40 yards, another 40 yards receiving, 3 catches. But, you know, listen, if somebody's concerned, maybe use this as an opportunity to buy low, make sure he's being valued as a top, you know, 8 to 10 dynasty running back. Like, you want to be attached to that offense. But he's definitely hasn't had the explosion, I think, that myself and other people may have expected once Damian Williams opted out this year. You know, I thought we were going to see Clyde Edwards-Helaire routinely put up 100, 120 total yards a week, to be honest with you. You know, even if he was only 70 yards rushing or something, I figured he'd be living in that 30 to 40 yards receiving every single week, finding the end zone a lot, but it has not come to fruition yet. Antonio Gibson, 11 carries, 27 yards, 5 catches, 24 yards. They continue to start ratcheting up his usage, but J.D. McKissic right now is a little bit of a thorn in his side in terms of pass catching, in terms of, you know, being out there in no huddle and comeback mode, which the Redskins are going to find themselves in a lot. But listen, if Gibson's getting 16 touches a week, I mean, you can't ask for much more than that. They seem to really like him. He's a guy that once that offense is better, I don't even think he needs 16 touches to be an impactful fantasy player, because I think his upside in terms of his big playability can make him viable even if he is not seeing that type of workload. If we take this to the wide receivers, I may already mentioned CeeDee Lamb, so let me come back to him. fantastic performance against the Giants this past week. 8 catches, 124 yards, showing the ability to win at all levels of the field from inside in the slot, which he's predominantly playing right now. He made a catch over the middle of the field where he took a hit, bounced right back up. But his body control, his ability to adjust, his ability to contort his body to catch the ball away from his frame, you combine that with his yak ability, his ability to get vertical. He's a guy that he's already shown me more at the catch point and overall nuance as a route runner at the NFL level than I ever saw at the college level. And that's not his fault. It's just that at Oklahoma, I mean, he wasn't asked to do a lot. He didn't have to do much at the catch point because he was always wide open, whether that was him creating that space or the scheme creating that space. So there were some question marks for me in terms of how he would handle it. But playing in the slot, playing on a team that has two other really talented wide receivers has been the perfect way for CeeDee Lamb to take the NFL by storm. He's not seen the top level defensive backs. He's not seen a lot of physical press coverage because he's inside in the slot. He's getting more clean releases. He's just eating up zone coverages and finding the soft spots, which we knew he can do that. So Lamb is off to a fantastic start. And, you know, if we right now redo rookie drafts from this past year, I'm not sure CeeDee Lamb is not the first pick in the draft over Clyde Edwards-Helaire, over Jonathan Taylor, in terms of his upside, in terms of the positional, you know, in terms of his position and how long a wide receiver could be dominant. And the right now, not seeing Clyde Edwards-Helaire take the league by storm in that offense, Jonathan Taylor to being question marks about his pass catching ability and how they might use him going forward, J.K. Dobbins in that backfield, Cam Akers in his muddled backfield, and DeAndre Swift, you know, right now in with a franchise and a coaching staff that seems to be a little bit confused in terms of what they're trying to do there. So I don't know. If you redo it right now, you can make the case that CeeDee Lamb is more valuable than any of those five running backs. And there was a lot of rookie drafts that the five running backs went before CeeDee Lamb went off the board. There were some rookie drafts I was in that he was sprinkled in between them. But you didn't see CeeDee Lamb at the top of any of those. And that could prove to be a mistake in the long run. The wide receiver that must be talked about is Chase Claypool. 4 touchdowns this past weekend, 7 catches, 110 yards, and 3 touchdowns receiving. Also had a rushing touchdown. He had another touchdown called back. I mean, he tested out through the roof at the combine, and that athleticism is now translating to the football field. And I don't know if we necessarily saw that athleticism fully translate at Notre Dame. You know, we saw him produce. We saw him win at the catch point. You know, obviously we know his size, his frame, his play strength. But now we're seeing, you know, the speed and his movement skills for a man his size. And then you combine that with his ability to win at the catch point. And he was really impressive this week. It's going to be hard for them to take him off the field much. It might push, you know, James Washington to the fourth spot. And honestly, if I was a betting man, I would say don't expect Juju Smith back with the Steelers next year. I think they're probably going to go with Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson as their main two wide receivers. They would still have James Washington, and we know their success in terms of drafting wide receivers. I could see them totally going out and in the third or fourth round targeting one of those slot guys that I talked about, whether it's Tutu Atwell, Elijah Moore, you know, Daz Newsome, somebody like that. Bring a slot guy, put him in the slot, have Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool as your outside wide receivers, still James Washington there. I don't expect Juju Smith-Schuster to be back there, to be honest with you, due to the emergence of Claypool, Deontay Johnson, you know, but right now Claypool's stock is way up. I mean, way up in that what looked like a crowded receiving group, and you kind of wondered if he was just going to kind of be like a number 3, number 4 there for a while. He might push his way into, you know, the top three, you know, maybe even be their second most productive wide receiver, you know, if things break right this year and he starts to outplay Deontay Johnson, who's battled some injuries the last couple games. But Claypool's a guy whose stock is way up compared to where it was before the season started. Laviska Shenault continues to be utilized in a Deebo Samuel way, which is what Matt and I talked about his role needed to be early in his career as he continued to refine his game. 7 catches, 79 yards. Due to the injuries, he saw Tyler Johnson, you know, a Devy favorite of many, and Draft Twitter. 4 catches, 61 yards. Looked like Tyler Johnson, you know, at Minnesota. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see, can he continue to work his way up the depth chart? Because, I mean, you got Justin Watson, you got Scotty Miller. Can he eventually get his way to that third spot? Because if he can get his way to that third spot, I think his dynasty value starts to go up a little bit. Right now, he's more of a stash. T. Higgins, A.J. Green left the game injured. I think at this point, A.J. Green should be more mostly an afterthought. T. Higgins is going to morph into Joe Burrow's number one target. Tyler Boyd, inside slot player, really good, productive player. But I think by the start of next year, T. Higgins is their number one type outside wide receiver for sure. He's probably morphing into that already. But I think as the year goes on, you're going to see the connection between him and Burrow continue to improve. And by next year, I think you can expect big things out of T. Higgins moving forward. Henry Ruggs came back from his injury. 2 catches, 118 yards, and a touchdown, showing his big play ability. I mentioned before with Jalen Waddle potentially having a Tyreek Hill-like impact when he gets to the NFL. I think Henry Ruggs is the same thing. I know some people want to say DeSean Jackson and Will Fuller, and if that's his floor, that's fantastic. But I think we could be talking about a Tyreek Hill special type player, you know, with his ability. We never even saw him see a target share that is and a market share that is representative of his skill set at Alabama because of all their other talented players. Ruggs can win at all levels of the field. He can be a big play after the catch. You can use him on jet sweeps and end the rounds, but he's got rare, rare special vertical speed. You saw that in this game, getting behind the Kansas City defense and making a big play. And you see the entire offense for the Raiders looks different when Henry Ruggs is on the field. So there it is. A couple other guys I could have talked about, but I'll get them in future episodes. Kind of want to see if Devin Duvernay continues to, you know, see different types of touches for that Baltimore team. I expect it. Darnell Mooney, who has worked his way into potentially now the number two wide receiver and, you know, pushed himself ahead of Anthony Miller. You know, he's a guy for Chicago, you know, we'll be keeping close eyes on. Justin Jefferson, after his two really good games, came back to the pack a little bit, 3 catches, 23 yards. Can't say I'm surprised there. They're a low-volume passing offense. A lot of it's going to go through Adam Thielen. So I think you're going to have to live with some inconsistencies from Justin Jefferson this year and probably until they, you know, change a little bit, you know, in terms of their offensive style. In terms of run, be so run heavy. I think you're going to see good weeks from him, but then you're going to see weeks like this. So it's just going to have to be, you're going to have to kind of live with the ups and downs if you're putting him in your starting lineup right now. But I think the upside long term is very, very high with Justin Jefferson. He's shown his ability, you know, to be an inside outside player. I still think he's best on the inside, but I think, you know, between his athleticism and in the early going this year, he has shown his ability to win on the outside because, you know, that's where he's predominantly been playing. When they bring BB in on three wide receiver sets, he's been the slot guy. So long-term, love Jefferson's upside in stock. Any of these wide receivers, whether it's LaVisca, whether it's Jefferson, if people aren't properly valuing them, go aggressively try to get them. As much as I love this year's wide receiver class for 2021, you know, don't lose focus of the fact that these guys were really, really talented. So if it, you know, if you have a late first round pick or an early second and you want to aggressively go get a guy like LaVisca Chenault or Justin Jefferson or Henry Ruggs, they've already shown in the early part of their NFL careers that they already can transition. They already can be productive players. So you already know that early in their NFL career. We don't know that about the college guys. We assume it. We think it. You know, I like to, you know, so don't be shy about being aggressive if you see an opportunity to go get some of these guys like Chenault, like Jefferson, or Henry Ruggs. I think they all have big upside as well. So there it is, guys, the NFL Rookie Report for Week 5. Hopefully you enjoyed this show, guys. Again, continue to harp. If you are a fan of the podcast, you know, in terms of the content we put out on Twitter, please consider getting over to the website. SSFootball.com is the quickest and easiest way to get over there. And think about purchasing the premium notebooks. You know, I'm going to talk about it just about every episode because they are the lifeblood of, you know, of what keeps us going here to cover, you know, all our expenses and costs. And if you have never purchased it, you know, we would love for you to consider giving it a shot this year for $9.99. You get access to our three premium notebooks. You immediately get the scouting notebook, which has full detailed player profiles on over 80 draft eligible prospects. More will be added. It's continually edited and updated in real time. It's not, you know, a stale document. I will make updates during the season. I will make a lot of updates after the season. I will continue to add players like I talked about. Kadarius Toney and Reggie Robertson are the first two guys that will be added to that mix. You also get the rankings notebook, which has all of our rankings, draft eligible, Devy rankings, dynasty rookie rankings. It'll have our tiers, you know, after the year, and also break it down to just the draft rankings for the guys who declare for the draft. And then in April, you get the 2021 draft projections notebook, tabs on every position, offense and defense, a quick snapshot of the type of player they are, how they win, some concerning areas, all their measurements from the combine, their all their testing numbers from the combine, and then projecting how I expect them to get drafted based on everything I'm hearing. So I take into all the information I'm listening to, seeing, reading, and I put together this notebook in terms of, and I rank them based on the order in which I expect them to be drafted. There's also a tab projecting the first round, top 32 picks, the first three rounds, which is usually approximately the top 100 picks, and then my guess at trying to project all 250 to 256 picks, whatever there usually is, of the entire NFL draft. So you get a tab for each of them broken down by position as well. It is the best way to support the show and help us continue to do what we're doing here. If you can purchase the premium notebooks, please get over to wherever you listen to the podcast, rate, review, and subscribe. Greatly helps us out as well. So on behalf of our sound tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. And I look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.